We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson is back in Memphis producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles, no disruption.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I wonder if you had it in your calendar, like it was in my calendar, March 20th. That'll forever be the day that Memphis introduced Penny Hardaway as its men's basketball coach. It was March 20th, 2018, when, in that beautiful practice facility, Tom Bowen and Dr. David Rudd introduced Penny Hardaway to a rousing ovation, and it's been almost nothing but good things ever since. Given that this is the one-year anniversary of that, the Tigers won a game last night in the NIT, we'll talk about the first year under Penny Hardaway momentarily, but first, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 420, Joe Mullinex is the site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Grizzlies are inside FedEx Forum tonight. James Harden, reigning MVP, perhaps future MVP, Houston Rockets in town. Talk to Joe Mullinex about James Harden, about this game, about the Grizzlies in general. He's going to be here in about 20 minutes. When I finish that segment, I'll do four notable stories. 444, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Belmont got its first NCAA tournament win in school history last night. It's a nice moment for Rick Bird. I'll tell you about that around 444. Tonight's first four game between at-large teams is Arizona State and St. John's. Those are two teams coached by former college basketball stars Bobby Hurley and Chris Mullen. We'll dive into that a little bit just a little later on this hour. John Calipari told reporters today that P.J. Washington has been in a walking boot. He has sprained his foot in that SEC tournament semifinal loss to Tennessee, but he is expected to play when Kentucky opens the 2019 NCAA tournament against Abilene Christian. I'll give you the details on that just before 5 o'clock. And Louisville coach Chris Mack was asked today about the NCAA tournament selection committee matching Louisville with Richard Pitino, Rick Pitino's son. You've got a first-round matchup between Minnesota and Louisville. I thought his answer was pretty good and touched on something that I had not taken into account as I celebrated and applauded the selection committee giving us this drama. I'll read you Chris Mack's quote during four notable stories at 444. That whole segment's going to be college basketball. Finish that. Jeff Clark is going to join me just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Memphis basketball. The Tigers played their first round NIT game last night. Final score was Memphis 74, San Diego 60. Jeremiah Martin got 21 points on just 12 shots, so another efficient performance from him. Tyler Harris got 16 points off the bench. The Tigers are now 22-13 overall, 18-3 inside FedEx Forum. They're 61st at KenPom, which means they now have a higher KenPom rating than the two at-large teams that are playing in the first four of the NCAA tournament tonight. I just mentioned that that was, or is, St. John's and Arizona State. Memphis is right now 61st at KenPom. Arizona State 62nd. St. John's is 81st. Memphis right now is 46th in the net. Arizona State is 63rd in the net. St. John's is 73rd in the net. So Memphis has a higher KenPom rating and a higher net ranking than Arizona State and St. John's, two teams that got at-large bids to the NCAA tournament. So this Memphis team is good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. It just didn't have the resume to create an at-large bid, which is something we had talked about in recent weeks when they lost the opportunity at Cincinnati to add a Quadrant 1 victory. That all but did it for their at-large possibilities. And the reason is because they just did not perform well enough in Quadrant 1, Quadrant 2 opportunities. Memphis right now is 4-12 in Quadrant 1, Quadrant 2 opportunities with one additional Quad 3 loss. Arizona State's 11-6, Quadrant 1, Quadrant 2 opportunities. St. John's 10-10, Quadrant 1, Quadrant 2 opportunities. So Memphis only had 4 Q1/Q2 wins. St. John's had 10. Arizona State had 11. Now, Arizona State and St. John's both took worse losses than Memphis took. Memphis only had one loss outside of a Quad 1, Quad 2 opportunity. St. John's had 3 of those, and Arizona State had 5. No, we had 4 of those outside of Quadrant 1/Quadrant 2 opportunities. But like I've said for a long, long time, the selection committee, even if they don't acknowledge it, values winning more than losing. Your W column matters way more than your L column. It's, as far as I know, always been that way. It's certainly always been that way since I've been doing this, and it was that way again this season. But the Tigers, from a computer perspective, are good enough to be in the NCAA tournament, evidence being this, that according to KenPom, if Memphis was playing either St. John's or Arizona State tonight on a neutral court, Memphis would be favored in the game. 61st at KenPom is the highest Memphis has been all season, and it's actually the highest they've been since December 2016. That was the December of Josh Pastner's final year as the Memphis basketball coach. The Tigers were 55th heading into a game with Southern. They started that season 7-2, of course finished 19-15, so they were 12-13 in the final 25 games of that season. And at some point in those final 25 games of the season, it really did get to a point where Josh Pastner had no future at the University of Memphis. The school didn't fire him, but they did pay him to go away. And when Georgia Tech offered the job, they paid him, I believe it was in excess of $1 million, to accept the Georgia Tech offer so that they could move on. Because by the time we had reached that point, again, never advancing to a Sweet 16, recruiting starting to slip, and going 12-13 in the final 25 games of that season, the fans were out. The administration was out. It was time to make a change. Obviously, they made the wrong change. The mistake was not firing or allowing Josh Pastner to move on, actually encouraging and paying Josh Pastner to move on. The mistake was hiring Tubby Smith, and that's how they ended up having to hire another coach literally a year ago on this day. Fire Tubby Smith after 2 seasons. And on March 20th, 2018, 1 year ago today, they introduced Penny Hardaway as the next Memphis basketball coach. And I went back last night and read the column I wrote from that morning, and it was nothing that, if I read it to you right now, you haven't heard me say at least 80,000 times. All of the reasons why Tubby Smith had to be fired and all of the reasons why Penny Hardaway had to be the person to replace him. But I touched on 3 basic things that I thought Penny Hardaway would fix immediately in a way that literally nobody else they could hire would be able to fix. And those 3 things were a money issue, an attendance issue, and a recruiting issue. And so it's interesting to look back a year later and try to evaluate how Memphis has done in those departments, how Penny Hardaway has done in those departments. Because the truth is, I don't think that he could have reasonably been expected to do anything more than what he's done in these first 365 days on the job. Donations are way up because season ticket sales went up, because people were engaged and involved and connected to the program again. Under Tubby Smith in that last year, attendance had slipped to around 4,000 people per game. If you walked in FedEx Forum for any game this season, you knew it felt differently, and the attendance numbers back that up. The fundraising numbers back that up. So he fixed the money problem. He fixed the attendance problem. And then, obviously, he fixed the recruiting problem. You know, in those 2 years under Tubby Smith, Memphis never enrolled a Memphis kid. Memphis never got a commitment from a, or at least got, Memphis never enrolled a consensus top 150 high school prospect. You know, on March 20th, 2018, Penny Hardaway took over a program with zero top 150 prospects, according to 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Fast forward to today, on March 20th, 2019, there are two such prospects, Tyler Harris and Antoine Jones, in the program, with at least four more on the way, namely James Wiseman, DJ Jeffries, Malcolm Dandridge, and Damian Baugh. It's a top 10 recruiting class in America that's going to join a program that just won a postseason game for the first time in a long time. And I'll never be the person to try to tell you you should celebrate the NIT. When you are a program that has accomplished what Memphis has accomplished historically, getting to the NIT is not to be celebrated. Getting to the NIT is not some massive achievement. But I will say that this team getting to this NIT is an overachievement. They weren't supposed to. They were ranked 107th in the preseason at KenPom. And now they're up to 61st. And if they would have just been what they were supposed to be, which is 107th at KenPom, they would not be in the NIT. They would be probably finished playing at this point. And so a year ago today, Penny Hardaway inherited a program that finished 161st at KenPom in the preseason because of additions he had made to the roster. They were 107th. And a year to the day after he was hired, it's 61st. That means he has, in his first 365 days on the job, improved the Memphis program, at least according to one metric, 100 spots from 161 to 61. That's not the type of stuff that's going to get you on National Coach of the Year list, because you can't sniff those lists unless you are actually, you know, coaching a top 25-ish team in the NCAA tournament. And that was never the case this season at Memphis. But to take over a program a year ago today that was in the shape that it was in and turn it into this inside of a year means that he could only get A's across the board when it comes to reviewing year one of the Penny Hardaway era. He got the fan base back, people who were just clocked out, emotionally uninvolved, are clocked back in and emotionally involved. He got FedEx Forum looking like what it was supposed to look like, what it's looked like before, what it's going to look like again. He got donations up, season ticket sales up, and recruiting. Again, there's a top 10 class on the way that I think is going to have Memphis ranked preseason top 25 and very much in the NCAA tournament conversation next season. And that doesn't mean that he did better than every other coach who was hired by a school last March or April, because Kermit Davis took over a bad situation and took Ole Miss to the NCAA tournament. And Chris Mack at Louisville took over a bad situation and took Louisville to an NCAA tournament. But given what Memphis basketball is supposed to be and how low Memphis basketball had sunk under the previous coach, to have all of this momentum and an actual respectable on-the-court product in year one is a pretty incredible job. And I know that when I wrote that column a year ago today on March 20th, 2018, it was well received in Memphis because we had talked about it enough that people within our market understood exactly why what was done, and why Penny Hardaway had to be the person to take over the program. Outside of the market, it wasn't received nearly as well. People were skeptical. People mocked it. You're just going to hire a high school coach to take over the University of Memphis basketball program? You're going to fire Tubby Smith to replace him with a grassroots coach? Okay, Memphis. But a year later, I don't know how anybody, even Tubby Smith's closest friends, could try to argue that it wasn't the right thing to do and that it hasn't worked about as well as even optimistic people could have reasonably hoped. I'm going to talk to Jeff Calkins about that again right around 5 o'clock. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the Memphis Grizzlies. Joe Mullinex is the site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He joins me next.
Hey, it's Jeff Calkins. Go now to 92.9ESPN.com. That's 92.9ESPN.com and sign up for the Book at Horseshoe Bracket Challenge presented by Papa John's Pizza. You could win over $1,500 worth of stuff, a year's worth of haircuts and products and supercuts, and get a University of Memphis Platinum Jewelers pendant necklace valued at $500.
Go to 92.9ESPN.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Joe Mullinex, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing?
I'm doing well, GP. How are you?
I'm doing better than most of the Grizzlies roster because it seems like everybody is hurt to one degree or another. I haven't sat down and broken it down yet, but on a very surface level, it appears that it can be difficult to convey a pick to Boston when you don't have NBA players to put into NBA games.
That's the type of game-breaking analysis that they pay you the big bucks for, GP. That's why they do it, for that type of thinking and line of analytical thinking.
I just try to look at it and I go, okay, these are the guys who are available to play. These are the guys who right. aren't available to play. Hard to win with the guys who are available to play and without the guys who aren't available to play.
Uh-huh. Exactly. I think that you're onto something there, and I'll even build off of that, and I'll add the following groundbreaking statement. They won't win many games with the guys that it sounds like they're going to have to play with.
It's incredible.
It's fascinating. You know, that's why we are viewed the way we are, GP, for our expert analysis. It really is a situation that's frustrating because you hear the message that they're trying to convey, and then they do stuff like this. Now, Avery Bradley, funny enough, was a guest of mine on our GBB Live podcast, our most recent episode, and I recorded that yesterday, and I wonder how much they knew at that time and all that stuff. And again, it's not like a Kyle Anderson who sounds like he has a chronic shoulder issue, or obviously Dylan Brooks out for the year with the toe. We might see Avery Bradley again. CJ Miles, it sounds like it's unlikely we'll see him again. But especially, even more so than NBA players or non-NBA players, regardless of your opinion of Javon Carter, people are hot or cold on him. Regardless of how you feel about Tyler Dorsey, is he actually an NBA player moving forward? If they were good young players, that doesn't change the fact that a decent veteran is going to put you in a better position to win on most nights than an okay rookie, simply because of the experience that they've had playing the NBA level or at the NBA level on a consistent basis. So you replace veteran wings like Avery Bradley and CJ Miles with a Julian Washburn or a Yuta Watanabe or a Tyler Dorsey or a Javon Carter. And those players may have more natural ability, depending on how you define that and what you're looking for out of your basketball player. I'd argue you don't necessarily have that either. But you're definitely lacking in terms of experience now. It means that those younger guys are going to get more reps, especially once the Memphis Hustle, who have clinched a playoff berth, shout out to the Memphis Hustle. But once their run is complete, they're going to be back in the mix. Yuta and Washburn are going to be back in the mix. So you're looking at a roster that's going to have to depend on Javon Carter, that's going to have to depend, God forbid, on Chandler Parsons, whether you like it or not. These are the types of players that are going to be looked to now to try to get this goal. And it's almost like they're, I don't want to say conceding, but they're okay with maybe being sixth. Because you look at the Tankathon standings, Atlanta's in front of them by six losses or five total games back, going by the games back that Tankathon uses. I'm looking at it right now. So they're nine games back of the Bulls for the fourth spot. They're five games back of Atlanta. They're only a game and a half out of the nine seed in terms of tanking, in terms of conveying the pick if they get tonight. Like, they're in that hunt still. It looks like maybe they've conceded that they're not going to get any worse than sixth. Maybe they're okay with being sixth, valuing that in terms of odds for Zion. But if they turn out to somehow start winning some games, that would obviously pay off for them in terms of their end goal of still trying to convey the pick. So maybe they've just kind of accepted that they're not able to fully tank, but they also don't want to be in a spot where they push people past the point of injury, especially in the case of Avery. You know, it's just another season that's riddled with injury, and now it's starting to impact them in their goals that they have, at least publicly, to try to get this pick to Boston this summer.
Talking to Joe Mullinex, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He's on Twitter, at Joe Mullinex. Among the people out is Jaren Jackson Jr., obviously. Also CJ Miles, Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, and now the latest, Avery Bradley. They've never said anything about Jaren other than out indefinitely. Do you expect to see him at all again in uniform and on the court this season?
No, out of sight, out of mind. And I do think Memphis, and I've seen people allude to this on Twitter a little bit, you know, you see talking heads nationally, should LeBron have this load management? You know, should he be able to have nights off? Should players be able to leave for stretches of time? Memphis did that, like, for a long time with Chandler Parsons, and no one seemed to care. You know what I mean? So maybe it's the old out of sight, out of mind kind of concept. You know, maybe Jaren is, if the Grizzlies were in the middle of a playoff hunt, this would be an interesting way to look at it. Would Jaren Jackson be out? I have a hard time believing he would be. Maybe the injury is more serious than we believe. I kind of see it as them saying they value a full offseason for him, physically preparing his body, getting bigger, getting stronger. Where he had issues this season as a rebounder, defensively in the post at times against bigger fours and fives, he wouldn't be able to focus on getting bigger and stronger if he was focused on rehabbing an injury. So it's almost like they're hedging their bets a little bit in terms of trying to make sure that he's at least healthy for what they view as an extremely important offseason, almost certainly for Jaren in terms of his development. And he's also not out there along with guys that you're necessarily sure he's going to be playing with moving forward. Mike Conley might be traded. Literally every player that was starting alongside Jaren or could be starting alongside Jaren has some sort of player option, some sort of team option, or some sort of uncertainty surrounding their future place on the team. So if he is banged up, and I do believe that he has something going on with that leg, if he is banged up, what difference does it make if he's out there fighting through an injury alongside guys trying to develop chemistry with pieces that may not be on the team in the first place when he is back full go heading into next season? So I think there's multiple layers to it. I would be surprised if Jaren was back on the floor, but crazy things are happening with the Grizzlies.
You mentioned Mike Conley. Since the All-Star break, his scoring is up about 3 points per game, even though his minutes are slightly down. Field goal attempts are slightly down. He is performing better for a variety of reasons since the All-Star break. And I do believe that that's going to lead to them, the Grizzlies, listening to offers, perhaps even pursuing offers for the franchise point guard and still soon to be all-time leading scorer in franchise history. Do you want the Grizzlies to move on from Mike Conley, or are you strictly on a tell me what it's for and I'll tell you if I'd do it?
Tell me what it's for and I'll tell you I'd do it is kind of where I'm at. If it's for a similar deal to what was rumored from Utah, Rubio, Exum, and a protected first-round pick, which is what the deal was rumored to be, and the Grizzlies said no, or Utah was uncomfortable with parting with both Exum and the first, whatever report you choose to believe, I think the price has gone up from that. I'll start with that as the very bottom basement, what I'd even consider. It would depend on what is being offered, at least to me.
Talking to Joe Mullinex, he is SB Nation's he's a site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com on Twitter, at Joe Mullinex. So if you and I are in agreement that the Grizzlies are probably going to pick in the 2019 NBA draft, have you started looking at prospects that will possibly be in what the Grizzlies actual range is. Obviously, if they get lucky, they pick first, they take Zion, it's a very short conversation. But if they are in that, you know, 6, 7, 8 range, have you started looking at prospects in that range? And is there anybody that stands out to you?
Yeah, I have. And I hope everybody in Memphis heard that sigh, because it's just, I have a real hard time, Gary. And again, we talked about this. You know far better than I. Jarrett Culver, Cam Reddish, these guys that I watch highlights of them. I'm more familiar with Cam Reddish. Anybody who plays in the ACC, I have a decent grasp on, because I'm in ACC country here in Virginia. I watch UVA pretty consistently. So I'm familiar with Cam Reddish. I want no part of Cam Reddish, at least me personally. I struggle with understanding how he can be so out of it on a Duke team that has that much talent. I don't know as much about Jarrett Culver. I don't know as much about a Darius Garland. I know he has potential as a scorer. I like the idea of the Grizzlies. If they don't convey the pick this year, I don't necessarily want them to take a project unless they jump up into the top three, and maybe it's a Morant or a Barrett, somebody who has the potential to be a star that isn't going to be that right away. I think everybody's in agreement Zion's probably going to be a star from the jump, but Memphis, as of this moment, only has a certain percentage likelihood that they're going to get that pick. So if it's going to be somebody that is in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range, I'd rather it be either a Darius Garland, if you're going to take a swing of the fence at a guy who could be an offensive scorer and a star, obviously coming off of an injury. Somebody said it today on Twitter. You get nervous when you see somebody's stock in the draft rise when they haven't played very much. You know, is the idea of him better than him actually? I think Garland is one of those guys that you could swing at. He could be a star pick at 6, 7, 8. Or I would rather them take somebody like a DeAndre Hunter, a Brandon Clark from Gonzaga. Yeah, they're older, but at the same time, they're going to be good NBA players. I mean, when you know that DeAndre Hunter's floor is probably like his name's on top of my tongue, Jay Crowder. If you know that that's his floor, like that's as bad as he's going to be, Jay Crowder's a pretty darn good basketball player, and chances are he's going to be better than Jay Crowder. So if that's the floor, if Brandon Clark could possibly be Paul Millsap, you know, Paul Millsap's not a superstar, but he's had a pretty darn good NBA career, and those are two guys that can help the Grizzlies now in terms of being good enough next year without a ton of cap flexibility. That won't come until 2020 when Chandler Parsons and the player options of Miles and Valanciunas come up. In the here and now, you need a player that's going to help you be good enough to convey that pick so you avoid the nightmare scenario of a 2021 unprotected pick going to Boston. That can't happen at any cost. So if you're at the stage now where you're going to have to pick this year, I don't think you take somebody coming off like a Jontay Porter. I don't think, you know, Darius Garland's probably my top piece on that. But Romeo Langford out of Indiana, to me, watching him play, he needs a ton of work. Little from North Carolina. In theory, he has all the tools, but he hasn't been able to produce at a high level in the ACC. I struggle with watching him and thinking, you know what, he's going to be a really good pro right from the jump. And I guess maybe I've been burned on that in the past with Jaren Jackson Jr. But at the same time, most people thought Jackson Jr. would be at least a decent defender or a really good defender out of the gate. And there's a little bit more question with Little. When you're being picked 15th in this draft, at least according to latest mocks, that doesn't mean that you're a dominant athlete like Jackson Jr. was. So to me, I could be talked into Darius Garland. I like his potential, and he could kind of be mentored by Mike and then take over the role in a year or two. But I would almost rather them, even if they're at 4 or 5, take somebody like a Brandon Clark or DeAndre Hunter and get somebody that can help them get that pick out of Memphis in 2020 to avoid the nightmare scenario of an unprotected pick going to the Celtics in 2021.
It's interesting you bring up Nasir Little and Jaren Jackson Jr. in the same sentence, because I thought for a little while now that Nasir Little might be like Jaren Jackson Jr. in this way. I think it's clear at this point Tom Izzo misused Jaren Jackson Jr. at Michigan
State. Absolutely.
He just did not use him correctly. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach. I like him a lot. He did not handle that type of player the proper way. And I don't know that Roy Williams is misusing Nasir Little, but Nasir Little enrolled in a program where he probably needs to be a 3-4, and they've got Cam Johnson senior there, Luke May senior there. He enrolled in a program where he's got two all ACC level seniors basically playing in front of him, and I think it might just be a bad fit where if he gets into a better situation, perhaps he'll look more like the prospect he was supposed to be coming out of high school.
That's certainly possible. And like I said, I do think you can make mistakes in the blog world, Gary, like wanting to trade Zach Randolph or, you know, those sorts of things. Things that I have done, the Jeff Green trade, Jeff Green's the answer. And I've said lots of dumb things over the years, and I think the key is to learn from them. I've learned from Jaren Jackson Jr., and I do think that you have to give Nasir a little bit of the credit that you just said. After watching Tom Izzo, because again, I gave Tom Izzo too much credit. I said Tom Izzo would misuse this kid, he has foul problems, there's all sorts of things that make me worried that he won't be good for a while. I always thought Jaren would be good. It was, when is he going to be good? Is he going to be good in 4 years? That doesn't help the current core at that time of Mark and Mike. And that's why I didn't like the pick. Obviously, that has turned out to not be accurate. He was further along than we thought. That's certainly possible with Little. And what you think about Kawhi Leonard? Wasn't Kawhi Leonard taken at 14 or 15 overall, something like that? And he becomes the superstar. You know, Donovan Mitchell is another example. Picking in the top four doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a home run pick. It increases your odds over the years. But there's always examples of guys picked either further down the lottery or even outside of the lottery that have excellent to superstar-level careers. So maybe that's the argument for taking somebody like him. Maybe that's the argument for taking the best player on the board, say Barrett or Morant falls for some reason to the Grizzlies at 5 or 6, trade the rights to that player to Brooklyn for maybe 16, and I'm just looking at their draft rights, and 27 overall. You know, you get multiple firsts. I've also had that idea, Gary. If you like the depth in this draft and you're not necessarily sold on one top guy, you could always trade back. Trey Jones, I think, could be a good point guard in the NBA. I really like watching P.J. Washington, Kobe White, you know, the Horton kid out of Iowa State. I have started I saw a comparison. I think the Ringer did a comparison. The small forward from Washington, who I always – Matisse, I think, is his first name.
Yeah, Thibel.
He got a comparison to Tony Allen. I think there might be some sneaky depth in this draft as long as you get value. That's my biggest concern. I don't know that I like the value of a Jarrett Culver at 4. If I could take Jarrett Culver at 14 or 15, sign me up. But if you're at that peak point, maybe there's an argument to be made for taking somebody if they fall, like a Cam Reddish. Say one of those teams that has multiple picks, Boston's going to have multiple firsts. Maybe they fall in love with Cam Reddish. You trade the rights to that player because they can't trade the pick. I think they have to trade the rights to the player due to the way that the rules line up with trading first. You can trade the rights once the pick is used and maybe trade back and try to acquire a Little and a point guard, you know, somebody along those lines, a Ty Jerome from Virginia as a later first round, even early second round pick. There might be some sneaky value later in this draft if you get at the right point in terms of making the selection. So I could be talked into that. I think there's some guys that could have good careers that come out of this draft, even though it's having a bit of a negative spin. It's just that after Zion, it seems like everything else is kind of blocked out by the eclipse that is Zion Williamson. There might be something beyond the lottery that might be worth looking into, and I'm sure the Grizzlies will do their due diligence as they look at all that stuff.
I'm wrapping up here with Joe Mullinex. He is site manager of SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com on Twitter at Joe Mullinex. Last thing before I let you go, Houston Rockets are in town. They were in Atlanta last night, won that game, so they're coming to FedEx Forum on a 3-game winning streak. James Harden had 31 points, 10 assists, 8 rebounds last night. He's obviously the reigning MVP, now averaging 36 points per game. He gets about 14 of those points from beyond the three-point line. Is he in the conversation for best player in the world right now? And do you think the Rockets, if healthy, are a real threat in the West to, I guess, obviously, the Golden State Warriors?
I mean, James Harden and Giannis, right? I think that you have to take that into account. As far as offensive game, I think it's hard to argue against James Harden and the way that he produces on that side of the floor. And people can hate on the way that he gets to the free throw line all they want, but there takes a level of skill in the way that he gets to the line in terms of the way that he positions his body. He understands where to put the ball, how to lay it up at the right time when he's at the rim. He understands the game of basketball at the NBA level, and he's using it to his advantage. So I don't necessarily hate on him as much as others do. And I think he's going to completely, you know, fillet the Grizzlies. He's going to just completely light them up. I mean, they gave up 132 to Atlanta and 135 to the Wizards. I don't know many rational thinking people that would say they're playing really good defense right now. So the best offensive player in the world to me is James Harden. I think you can say Giannis is probably the MVP at this point, and it's probably his to lose. But obviously, best player in the world isn't always the MVP. You know, LeBron has kind of held that title for a long time in the NBA. Maybe James Harden's in that mix. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, of course, are there as well. But LeBron is definitely as vulnerable as he's been in a long time, whether he's disinterested, whether he's injured, however you want to put it. I think Harden is definitely in that conversation. Now, as a threat in the West, it's going to really come down to how they can get, how much they can get out of Chris Paul. You know, when Chris Paul is at the top of his game, it's like one of the very best in the world, and he makes Houston a threat. When Chris Paul looks his age, that limits them a good bit in terms of ball handling, secondary scoring. You know, Houston has the pieces in place to make a run at Golden State. They almost beat them last year. Clint Capela is a really good young big, but it's really going to come down to the second in command there in Houston, Chris Paul, being able to be that over the course of a seven-game series against the most talented team potentially in the history of the NBA with that starting five that the Warriors have.
That is Joe Mullenix, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. You can do that at Joe Mullenix. That's at Joe Mullenix. Terrific stuff as always, man. I appreciate you being here.
GP, my pleasure as always. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That's Joe Mullenix, site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. When we come back, turn our attention to the NCAA tournament. Belmont got its first NCAA tournament win in school history last night. We got another first four game between at-large teams tonight. That's Arizona State and St. John's. Chris Mack, the Louisville coach, was asked today about Richard Pitino, Rick's son, coaching against Louisville. And John Calipari provided an update on P.J. Washington. I'll get you through all of that right after.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michaels. Owner, it's not your traditional mattress and furniture store. Their prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. They're already killing the competition 52 weeks a year. Got an A-plus rating, Better Business Bureau. When readers of the Commercial Pill were asked to vote for the best mattress store, the winner four straight years, Sleepy Z's. But they don't just sell mattresses, also furniture. Living room sets, dining room sets, rugs, anything you need to furnish a home, you can probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor, understand there's a 42-inch kiosk there filled with furniture. You can browse through it, find what you want, and then they'll get it for you. And remember, mention you heard about them on the Gary Parrish Show to save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zauner. You want to pop into the store? It's located 2790 Kirby Whitten in Bartlett at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. The phone number is 901-692-6200. 901-692-6200. That's Sleepy Z's on the web, SleepyZZZS.com. Jeff Clark is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, and it might really be a little after 5 o'clock. We're making good time right now.
You're
relative
on
to what we usually do. I mean, we're
close. I mean, you're better, like 3-4 minutes.
Better than normal.
Yeah, I mean, true.
That's what she said.
Better than normal.
Yeah.
Jeff Clark will be here a little after 5 o'clock. Right now, though, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 444. Story number one.
NCAA tournament officially got started yesterday. In the first game, Fairleigh Dickinson beat Prairie View, so they advance into the main bracket. Prairie View A&M is done. And then the nightcap was the game between two at-large teams in the first four, both 11 seeds, trying to break into the main bracket, play Maryland in the round of 64. Final score was Belmont 81, Temple 70. Mm-hmm. So Belmont now has its first NCAA tournament win in school history. Congratulations to Rick Byrd and his Bruins. And I was rooting for that outcome, I think, even though to root for Belmont meant to root against Fran Dunphy in what could be his last game as a college basketball coach. So that's not a fun spot to be in. But I wanted Rick Byrd to win for the same reasons that I used to – I remember wanting Josh Pastner to finally win a top 25 game.
Yeah.
Because
did
it becomes a bullet
done?
Point.
Did he ever get that done?
He did. He finally got it done. It took years.
It took years.
But he got it. Eventually got it good. Done. And so these things become bullet points that get attached to your name, and they just get repeated every time you miss out on another opportunity. And Rick Byrd had got to the point where he was 0-7 in NCAA tournament games. So he had been tremendous at Belmont. And keep in mind, this is a school that hasn't been a Division I basketball school forever. It's only been playing Division I basketball for like 20, 25 years. So the idea that they'd even be getting to NCAA tournaments is pretty remarkable, but they had not won. And one of the points Rick Byrd had made before last night's game is, I hear you. 0-7 is 0-7, but like every time we get into this thing, we're seeded like 11 seed, 12 seed, 13 seed. We're always playing somebody who's supposed to beat us. And so they beat us. And the nice thing about being in the first four is that you get to play somebody from your own neighborhood. You get to play a comparable team. It's a fair fight. You know, you've got a knife and they got a knife, as opposed to you having a knife and they've got like a tank. And so Belmont right. was in a fair fight against Temple last night, actually favored by 3 points at tip. And when Belmont had lost to Murray State in the OVC title game, so Murray State got the automatic bid, and it was unclear if Belmont would get an at-large. I tweeted, give Belmont an at-large, put them in the first four, and watch them win that game by 13 points. And they end up winning last night's game by 11, and they had the ball at the rim with the shot clock off and just pulled it out because Rick Byrd's a gentleman. But had they just laid the ball in or dunked it, they would have won the game by 13 points. So that is one prediction that I got right. Promise you there are several more wrong ones on the way.
Story number two.
First four continues tonight. North Carolina Central, North Dakota State going to play at 5:40. Winner of that game is going to advance into the main bracket to play Duke. Kind of a funny little storyline. Lavelle Moten, who I've had on the show before when NC Central played at Memphis a few years ago, real, just a good dude, big character, great personality. He was, after North Carolina Central won the automatic bid from its conference to go to the NCAA tournament, it was clear they were going to be a 16 seed. And so somebody asked him at his press conference, like, is there anybody he would love to play or anybody he'd like to stay away from? And he said, you know what? I'm going to be honest. I don't want to play Duke. Because if we play Duke, like, it'd be like me playing against my six-year-old son.
Right.
Like it's Zion Williamson against my guys? What are we talking about? And so then the bracket comes out, and if they are fortunate enough to win this game tonight, and they are five-point underdogs, so they probably won't, but if they win it, then they will get what Lavelle Moten has already said is his worst nightmare, which is his six-year-old basketball team, relatively speaking, against Mike Krzyzewski's Duke Blue Devils. But it would still be a fun story because the Duke and NC Central are separated by a bazillion miles in terms of basketball tradition and ability, mm-hmm. but that not that far in actual miles. I know that Lavelle is close with Coach K, so that would be a nice little storyline heading into that. But the big game tonight is the game between at-large teams, St. John's and Arizona State. Now, both these teams come into this event struggling. That's why they're playing in Dayton as opposed to already advanced to the main bracket. But I told you earlier, I thought this was interesting. If you go by the KenPom numbers right now, Memphis has a higher KenPom rating than both of these teams
wow.
that are playing tonight in the NCAA tournament as at-large teams. Memphis is 61st at KenPom right now. Arizona State is 62nd. St. John's is 81st. So if Memphis would have had an at-large resume, because they had the computer numbers, they just didn't have the quadrant one, quadrant two wins that Arizona State and St. John's had. But if Memphis had an at-large resume that would have possibly put it in a game like this,
yeah.
Memphis would be favored tonight on a neutral court over St. John's, favored tonight on a neutral court over Arizona State. So if you watch that tonight, it'll just be a reminder. The Tigers, in terms of ability, weren't that far off from making the NCAA tournament. They just didn't have the resume to present to the selection committee.
Story number three.
So Chris Mack and Louisville had their media availability earlier today, and obviously he was asked about Louisville opening the NCAA tournament against Minnesota because the obvious storyline is Rick Pitino's son, Richard Pitino, coaching against the University of Louisville. And Louisville's not just the place where his father used to coach, won a national championship and was tremendous. You know, Richard worked there for 3 years, two different stints. He was there for 2 years, then he went to work for Billy Donovan for a year at Florida. And if you remember the timing on all that, that's when the Karen Cipher stuff, the affair and the sordid details from that whole thing. And I think Rick just wanted Richard to get out of there for a little while because it was so ugly, you know, in that market from a family perspective. Yeah. And so my understanding was Rick picked up the phone and called Billy, who was a former Rick Pitino assistant, and just said, I need a favor. You know, can you put Richard on your staff for a little while just to get him out of here? Because it's a bad thing here right now. And because we still had the Karen Cipher trial coming up and all sorts of stuff. And so he went and spent, I think, a year at Florida. But then he came back to Louisville before he ultimately became a head coach. And now he's coaching against the University of Louisville. So, again, my point is this isn't just the place his dad used to coach. It's a place Richard used to work. It's a place Richard used to live. And so Chris Mack, the new Louisville coach, was asked about this earlier today, and here's what he said. I thought it was interesting. He said, I haven't even talked about it with our players. I just feel like it's such a special experience, the NCAA tournament, just a special experience for some of our guys to do this for the very first time and maybe the only time in their career. So for me to focus on anything other than trying to be at our best against a really good Minnesota team, I think would be robbing them of the experience of being here. And then he continued, you know, I don't mind it, and I understand why media is going to ask about it, but here's the thing. I took over for a Hall of Fame coach, Rick Pitino. I get that. He's a terrific coach. And when I got this job, I asked him for his advice, and he was nothing but gracious to me. But this is about the players and the coach's experience in the tournament, and that's it. It's no more than that. And I think the committee could have probably had a little bit more self-awareness so that we don't have to be up here answering these types of questions and focusing on the student-athletes and the coach's experience and the fan base's experience. But, you know, I can't control that. His point being that even though this is a juicy matchup for all of the reasons that I've explained, it really does take away from his players' experience.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting asked about the game at all. I'll be honest. I've been talking on TV, podcast, and radio nonstop since that bracket was released, and I bet you I've spent 20 minutes, 30 minutes combined talking about Minnesota, Louisville in the round of 64.
Yeah.
And I've never mentioned the game at all.
It's distracting. It's
never like who I think's going to win, why I think they're going to win.
Yeah.
You know, the job Chris Mack has done in year one, the job Richard Pitino's done to get Minnesota back in the NCAA tournament after an injury-riddled bad season last season. Every comment conversation about this game is about Richard Pitino's son coaching against the school that fired Richard Pitino. And I think Chris makes a good point there. Now, if I've got to weigh the pros and cons, I still want this because I'm more into storylines than I am anything else. And Richard Pitino coaching against and possibly beating Louisville, you know, a couple of years after Louisville fired his father is a tremendous storyline. So I prefer it. But I do think if you were trying to argue against these types of things, that Chris Mack makes a decent argument. You really do turn this into something that it's not supposed to be about. These are memories that my players are creating, and yet heading into the game, none of the story is about them or about our team or the other team. It's all about the former coach and his son coaching against the school that fired his father. And so, I'm all for it. I like the storyline, but I did think Chris made a reasonable point in explaining it that way.
Story number four.
John Calipari told reporters today that P.J. Washington did sprain his foot in that loss to Tennessee on Saturday in the SEC tournament semifinals, but he also said he did expect P.J. to play when Kentucky opens the NCAA tournament against Abilene Christian. The x-rays all came back negative, but Kentucky, John, decided to send P.J. Washington to a specialist just to make sure if he plays on this, because he wants to play on this, or is he risking anything? Like, is this the type of injury that if he plays on it, it could cause a long-term issue, something that might require surgery? Because P.J. Washington presumably is going to enter the NBA draft within 48 hours of Kentucky's season being done and probably be a top 20 pick this June. That means he's a future multimillionaire, and you just want to be careful with anybody who has that type of monetary future within their grasp. And so it's the safe smell. But he wasn't there when Kentucky originally arrived, and he is expected to play against Abilene Christian, but whether he'll be 100% or 80% or something lower than that remains unclear. Jeff Calkins is up next.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN, WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett, WMFS Memphis, a Radio.com sports station. This is 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, it's Jeff Calkins. Go now to 92.9ESPN.com. That's 92.9ESPN.com and sign up for the Book at Horseshoe Bracket Challenge presented by Papa John's Pizza. You could win over $1,500 worth of stuff, a year's worth of haircuts and products and supercuts, and get a University of Memphis Platinum Jewelers pendant necklace valued at $500.
Go to 92.9ESPN.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.